Okay. We always have such small classes on Friday. It was like that when we had in-person classes, and it's still like that, which is funny because there's I always thought on Friday it's because nobody really has classes on Friday, but now I don't know why it is. Especially because time is meaningless and nothing ever changes. But that is what it is. I'm not gonna wait a whole lot longer for people. You guys are like my hardcore group. Okay, I am going to remind you guys to do course evaluations if that's a thing you want to do. You have a limited time to do that. I did get an email that 5% of my course had responded, which I was like, okay, cool. I think that's maybe two students. I have no idea, but I was excited. So, yes, I encourage you to do that. I think it's good in general to give feedback to UNO, and especially if there's something you would like changed, or if there's something you think is going really well. Let's we are going to start with kind of a little review. It's a different slide set, so let me pull it up. Okay. So this is, I think, an activity that we did a little bit with earlier in the semester. But when Matt went over it again this morning, I was like, oh, that's really helpful. I'm glad we're doing this again. And I don't think we got all the way through it. Like, you guys can tell me if this looks the first part I remember, and I just don't think we went through like the CS Illustrated part, which is kind of nice now that we're like, I think we have a better understanding of some memory and I think this is helpful to look at again as just like a little reminder of all this stuff. Cool. Okay. So remember we have our pointers in C. So let's look at a little bit of C code. Declared an integer variable X, an integer pointer P, and then we assign them. So X will be assigned the value of 99, and P will be assigned the value of the address of X, right? So now P is a pointer to X. So we've got that. This is where we were first introduced to that ampersand, meaning like the address of. And this stuff, like I said, I think we went through, although I think we went through it pretty quickly, and it was right when we were just like introducing you guys to some C stuff. So hopefully this like sticks a little bit more now, and this all looks like a little bit more familiar than it did before. And you'll probably remember this guy. So we have that same little bit of code, and now we're gonna look at it. So we're used to looking at memory in this like contiguous way now. It's just like bytes of memory, and like, of course, this is like still a level of abstraction that like isn't quite reality. So this would be like how your program views its memory, but remember that in actual memory, like these are all virtual addresses, so these could actually exist a bunch of different places in like actual machine memory, but we're going to think like the program. So for the sake of simplicity and pretending we are, a process, this is what our memory looks like. So we have X right here, which is 99, and that is held some place in memory. So that also, remember, P points to the address of 99. So if we dereference it, it's also going to be equal to 99. We've got that memory address 1 right there, right? So that's in memory somewhere, and that can also be accessed by calling the memory of X or ampersand X. Cool. This is great. We also have that pointer to this value 99, and that has to be in memory somewhere. So this pointer P, if we don't dereference it, it's going to, the value of it will be this memory address, right? This memory address where 99 is. And that has to be stored somewhere in memory as well. So we've got that at memory address 2, and we can get that address to see where that pointer is in memory with that ampersand again. Does anybody have any idea what this stuff over here on the right would be. So if we tried to dereference X, what would happen? Does anybody have a guess? You can throw it in the chat too if you don't want to. You don't want to do the microphone thing.
Depends on if 99 is a valid address.
But. Yeah, exactly. So 99 is very likely not going to be a valid address. I don't know any, you know, even in a, if this were like a very simplified system, like potentially, but given what it is now, so if we try to dereference X, if we try to get that memory address at 99, we will very likely get the segmentation fault. Whoop, there it is. Any questions about this? With this, I know we went over before, I remember, but I think like it was at a time this semester when, you know, we're all a little shakier on this stuff. So if we have questions now, or if anybody has any like anything to point out or anything like that, happy to have any comments there. Okay, cool. So we also have this little bit of, you know, code from our old trusty KNR that also like helps illustrate some of this stuff. So we start with this, you know, declaration and assignment of some integers. We've got x equals 1, y equals 2, and then we declare a an array z of size 10, which also means that z is, you know, a pointer to the beginning of that array. And then we declare this integer pointer, which we've named IP conveniently, that we don't assign to anything yet. So the first thing we do in this code is we assign the that integer pointer to the address of X. So now we've got our pointer pointing to X. So then we're gonna play around with this stuff a little bit. Let's take Y and assign it to the value that is dereferenced when we look at that memory address at X. So now Y equals 1 because Y equals X, right? Hopefully that is clear and that makes sense. I think it's pretty straightforward. We can also now then change whatever is in whatever X is, because our integer pointer is pointing to X. So whatever is in memory there, as far as the value, we can take that dereference value and change it to 0. So here's what we're doing now. We're assigning X to this. We're assigning 0 to X. So now X is 0, Y is 1. And finally, we can take IP and reassign it a value. Now we're going to point it to the beginning of that array, Z. Okay, so this is the stuff. I don't think we like really went through this. And this will kind of like reinforce more of this stuff, and I think it's kind of cute. So let's imagine this is like on, you know, like I said, we're used to seeing our array like this now. We've got some very, very small simplified addresses that we're working with down there in the little boxes. And we have a couple of pointers, P and Q, and then an integer X, and we haven't assigned them any values yet. So we've got these little pointers that are just hanging out. Actually, I like had forgotten about this and it, until it got connected back to this illustration. Before you assign a value to a pointer, it's dangling. So these are, you know, actual literal dangling pointers, which is cute. And we have this variable X, which is an integer, which we have given this place in memory at assigned any value yet. And if you look at these little like dudes, like, you know, their bellies, I guess, I don't know, they just right now have garbage in them. I feel like I'm not seeing all of this slide. I'm not. Second, I don't know if I messed this up when I converted this into a PDF, or this is just what our slides are like. Okay, cool. I'm going to switch over to this because that is something that LaTeX did. Okay, cool. So there we go. Now we can see everything. Sorry about that. Although that's nothing new. That's everything I told you. And right now they're just full of garbage because we haven't given them any value yet. So this next slide, we will also declare an array, sorry, of size 4A. And we're going to give that space at this address 24. So we have 16 bytes of memory. Is that right, my brain? Yes, at 24 that's been allocated for this array. So now we've got a bunch of stuff. Nothing's been assigned any values yet. They're all full of garbage. Or it would either be just nothing or like whatever was being used at that point or before this in memory in those spaces. So it could be, you know, any value really. Okay, so now we're going to take our first pointer P, and we haven't really talked at all about malloc in this course. You probably, I mean, I think you saw it maybe, or you might have noticed it in intro lab. There is like a malloc lab that we don't do, so you're welcome. Are you guys, there we go. It's funny because I feel like you're following along the side of me, but as soon as I move over to Safari, I like lose all of my other Zoom info. Okay, so now we take this pointer and we ask the system basically to allocate some amount of memory space for it. So right here, we are taking our pointer and we're pointing it at this address 40, and we just want 4 bytes, right? Because that's the size of an int. It still has nothing in it, but now our pointer is pointing at someplace in memory of some size. So there we are. And we are going to go ahead and assign our Q pointer to point to the address of X. So we're pointing it to that address. Okay, so now we start actually assigning things, assigning values to stuff. So we here and we assign the dereference value there to 1. So now our little guy equals 1 over there. The same thing happens with Q. We assign the value of Q to 2. I feel like I'm saying that in a really weird way. And then A, which is, remember, pointing to the beginning of that array, we assign the value there to be 3. So the value of the first index in that array is now 3. And we can also print all this stuff for clarity. So we've got our, if we dereference our P, we're gonna get 1. P points in memory to memory spot 40. P is in memory at 12. It's covered up right there, but that's 12 down in that little box. So we've got those 3 things there. Same thing for Q. Q dereferencing Q will give you 2. Q points to memory address 20. And Q is stored in memory at 16. And then for A, because remember, A is the name of the array, but A also is like a pointer to the base of that array. So when we dereference A, we get 3. A is in memory or the memory address of A is 24 and A is in memory at 24. Any questions about that stuff? I feel like that is all like, I think that's like a nice tie-in, but maybe this is all stuff that you guys all like already understood and, you know, it's boring. I think I get confused with this stuff sometimes, especially if I don't look at it for a while and I come back to it and I'm like, shoot, I have to like remember it. I have to like get this straight in my brain before I talk about it. So I think like reviewing it as much as possible is helpful. So there we go. This we've already looked at. Okay, cool. We also have this little bit of syntax here. So I didn't realize this, but Matt had mentioned this is like a very common like programming kind of like test to see if you're like a novice programmer or if you're a little bit more advanced. So you might see something like this on an interview if you ever mentioned that like C is one of your languages or you do some sort of programming test in C. But we have this call to swap. So here we're swapping A and B. A is 1, 2, 3 and B is 4, 5, 6. And you would think that what happens is we just like actually literally swap those variables. So A would equal 4, 5, 6 and B will equal 1, 2, 3. But if we look at the actual like implementation of swap, that is done via like temporary variables. So we never actually change the value of A and B. We change the value of X and Y, and those are just copies of A and B. So that's like a little difference there that is kind of nuanced. And we could, so here we're looking at that. Here we're looking at that in assembly. So we can, I think this is the example of actually if we did want to actually change A and B. So we could do that as well. We would pass in pointers to A and B, and then we would use these temporary variables still, but then we would, you know, actually change the values of A and B by dereferencing these pointers. And this is, I think, a little closer look at what that looks like if you go down to the actual assembly code. So we have RDI and RSI where we pass in these pointers, right, because of our calling convention, and they point to these places in memory, these values. Let me see what this next slide looks like. So yeah, we've got 1, 2, 3, and 4, 5, 6, and our pointers point to, you know, those corresponding spot, those memory addresses. So we can actually move where those pointers are pointing to. So right here, we're going to assign RDI. So we're assigning a pointer to RDI. So we're assigning 1, 2, 3 to RAX. This is the one where we use, so we're using those temporary variables, right? And then we're gonna assign the value at 100, which is what RSI was pointing to 4, 5, 6. And then we can reassign to the other memory address, if that makes sense. So now we can actually have like 1, 2, 0, which was originally our A, equal our B, which is 4, 5, 6. We can do the same thing with our B variable and actually change that to be 1, 2, 3. So here we've like literally swapped that stuff. So you can just kind of like, this is, I think, nice to just kind of illustrate like how useful like this pointer stuff is. Let's see. That in the book, I could tell. So those slides were from chapter or from February 14th. Let me see. Dun, dun, dun. what we were going over then, what chapter we were in. So that should be in 3.6 still. Right, here we go. And you know, I will say that there's a chance that since we don't list the actual book sections on the top of the slides, that this is something that Matt just put together, pulled from different places. Like some of that was pulled from CS Illustrated, some of it was pulled from you know, K&R. So that might not actually be in the book, but you have it in your slides here. If you look at the slides for February 14th. So if you want to go back and review that on your own and kind of look through it a little bit more and make sure you understand it, that is where that lives. It was also, I think, if you look, if you have K&R or if you have like an, you know, some PDF version of it, this stuff was in chapter 5 in K&R. So I would definitely take, if you're interested in pointer stuff, I'd definitely take a look there as well. Okay, let's get rid of you. Let's find my other slides. Okay, let me see, where were we last time? We do nested arrays, multi-dimensional arrays. I don't think so. I think that might be where we stopped. I think this part of the slide too, and you know, some of you will make this connection on your own, but I think it's nice to point this stuff out. But remember how we talked about when we were talking about caching and stuff, like efficient programming practices and how to like make sure that we are writing things like for loops and stuff in ways that like access our memory efficiently. Now we're gonna like actually see that memory, like those, and I had to try to draw a multi-dimensional array and it was a nightmare, especially via Zoom. Now we're going to like actually see that memory diagrammed a little bit. And I think this is really a really helpful illustration of like why we want to access memory in this way. So when we have multidimensional arrays, and this declaration will be very familiar to you, there's a type, there's a name, and then we've got our rows, our number of rows, our number of columns. So this, of course, corresponds to a two-dimensional array of any data type T. We've been using int, let's just stick to ints, those are easy. And it's gonna have R rows and C columns. And then of course, we've got our type T, our type, we're gonna go with ints. That's gonna require K bytes, so 4 bytes here. So we can try and get the, if we like ran size of on like whatever array we end up building, that the way that we would get that is by multiplying the number of rows, the number of columns, and whatever K byte, whatever the type of bytes was, whatever the type requirement for bytes was, there we go. So R times C times K bytes. So C utilizes this organization called row major ordering. And you'll remember this when we went through all of that like array stuff. So if we look at this here, we have our A rows and columns, and our rows are gonna be on top up there and the columns are gonna be on the bottom. And we're looking at it in this way. So what we do is we have A row 0. And before we move on to A row 1, we, in memory, store every column that corresponds to row 0, right? Then we move on to row 1 and store every column that corresponds to row 1, et cetera, until we get to our very last row, or R minus 1 row. Any questions about that? That should look like very familiar and like be clicking some stuff for you, because remember how we talked about, and I think, let me go ahead and see what size we've got coming up. Okay, so before I get into that, we'll look at this like actual example. So we remember we had this like type def. So what we're doing here is we've got this array of arrays, basically. So we've got this array PGH, which is an array of this type that we defined earlier as a five integer array, and we are going to have four of those arrays in this multidimensional array. So this is equivalent. So we define that type in the last slide set, not the last slide, so the last time we went over this stuff, as these interarrays of size four. So this is equivalent to saying this is a multidimensional array PGH with four rows and five columns. So this will all get allocated contiguously in memory. It's going to look just like this. This is, I think, like a nice way to point out. So if we were to try to access indices from this array via columns, the kind of like memory jumping would be like we'd start with one here, we'd have to jump 20 bytes, do one here, jump another 20, and so on and so forth, and then go back to the beginning and do five and five and five, lots of fives, these are all in the same city if they're zip codes, obviously, or state. So that's like super inefficient. If we access things via rows, we can just take single steps. Stuff. If we ask for this piece of memory that one is in, this like 76 right here, we're gonna get some extra memory with that. Like we're gonna have some extra memory cached around that because of our locality rules. So then we probably, that is stored in our cached memory and then we can access really quickly. Whereas if this was like a big array and we were doing it by columns, like there's a good chance that when we get to something like this, it's not actually like stored in our cached memory. So then we have to do a memory access, God forbid. And then we risk the chance of like writing over something that we don't want to write over in our cached memory yet, and so on and so forth. So you can kind of see, like, I think it's nice to go back to this stuff because it really all does fit together. Like, it's all like this, like really nice, like, you know, machine. There's sense for all of it. Okay, does anyone have questions about that stuff? I completely lost my chat, so. No, okay, so there's no questions. All right, well, let's keep moving. This is just giving us a look at how we would access different rows in our multidimensional array. I don't think that we need to go too in depth into this stuff. The same thing with accessing like a specific index rather than just, you know, a row. What's after this? So we wanted to get a specific index from this. From this array, we would take our base address, right, our PGH, and then do 20 times whatever that index is, because our array size is 20 bytes. And this is just a little bit, I think this is just re-emphasizing that. This is just kind of that calculation. So if we wanted to get, you know, ace of ij, we would take the starting address and then we would scale the row number by however many columns we have. And then we would add it to the column we want. And both of those things we're going to have to multiply by k. So luckily, you won't need to go too in depth with this. It gets a little bit more complex, but really the reason we're going over this stuff is to like show you how things are laid out in memory and so that you have a good idea of that. I think it like helps create like more holistic programmers, right? Whoopsies. Okay, so we also have, and we haven't, I think, really talked about this a lot yet, but we can also have an array of pointers, right? So we can create this array. We still have those original like arrays from earlier examples. We could create this new array, an integer array called UNIV of size 3, and have it be pointers to those arrays. So this is an illustration of that. Each of those elements is going to be 8 bytes because the addresses are 8 bytes. I think that is everything you need to know from this slide, except for it doesn't really matter what order those are in because they're pointers. The other thing to know about this, and I forget which part of Shell Lab Matt said you may have run into things like this, is at this point we're doing like two levels of indirection because we have to like dereference things multiple times. And then it gets a little bit trickier and like more abstract. And so you can run into things like pointer exceptions or segmentation faults like pretty easily. So that's just something to be careful of. And these accesses look very similar in C, but the way that we do the address computes are gonna be very different. I don't know if one is inherently more efficient than the other, but that is a look at like how those address computations will differ based on whether or not you are using pointers to grab something, or you to grab an index here, or whether you are just directly accessing the array. Okay. Okay, cool. We've got some time. Okay, so that's it for arrays. That's all we're going to really talk about with them. The thing to take away from the array stuff is just really to remember that our machines have no concept of arrays. That's an abstraction for us, like putting things in those little boxes. But the way that it looks in memory is important and helpful, and understanding like how we can be most efficient as far as like accessing that stuff. I thought there was a, if it's down here. Okay, so I thought there was a slide and maybe I missed it. We have, maybe this is just something that Matt said. You know, we have that like row oriented memory. There are definitely like other languages that have column orientation. I think the examples were like MATLAB and R and Fortran, and those are like very often used for math stuff. I feel like MATLAB is used a lot in engineering, but somebody said, and they also start with index 0 or index 1 instead of index 0. I feel like somebody said that engineers start with index 0 too, so I don't know. But just, you know, this is like a C specific thing. A lot of our, I think all computer science languages really obviously start with index 0, which makes sense, I think, especially when you look at this stuff, because you can just use that index base as like, you know, addressing. Otherwise, you're wasting that 4 bytes at the beginning by using one. But, and I think most of our languages are also row oriented. Okay, so the other thing we're going to talk about are structs, and you definitely saw these. You saw this in Intro Lab. So from the very beginning of the semester, we've used structs. We used it to create this like student struct that had different kinds of data in it, you know, names, so character arrays and integers and probably doubles and different integer arrays. So we saw that then, we probably didn't realize what it is. Structs are actually like really similar to the objects that we use in Java. They are just data structures where we can store, you know, multiple types of data. So let's look at this little, we also had structs in Shell Lab. You might have noticed them. They were like, you know, kind of built for you. Okay, so let's look at this little baby struct. We've got an integer array of size 4. We have this, I forget what the size T is. So sorry about that. I don't remember what that is. And then we have another little struct that is pointing to next of type rec. So we are storing another struct in this struct. So a structure is just represented as a block of memory as well, and it has to be big enough to hold all of the fields. So this is an implementation of a linked list. So we have this structure, and then we have a pointer to the next structure of its type, right? So here we have, the important things to note are that the structure is obviously big enough to hold all the fields. The fields are ordered according to how they're declared in C. So even if another ordering could yield a more compact representation, that'll make more sense in a second. And the compiler is going to determine the overall size and position of the field. So the machine level program, again, has no understanding of structures the same way there's no understanding of arrays. It's just, some amount of contiguous memory that gets allocated. Okay, so here we have this integer array. So we've got the base as R. We've got this index at can be calculated or computed as R plus 4, which is the size of an integer, times the index number, which we've gone over a few times. We have I, which is, it's 8 bytes long. I don't remember what that guy is. And then we've got a pointer to the next structure of this type. Okay, we are not gonna go into that because what is important to us, what we kind of try to teach about structs really is how they are laid out in memory and how they have to be assigned. So we have these different data types. We've got a character, different integers, and a double here. So this is a new structure. So we have to align our data in a multiple of however many bytes that data type requires. So characters are great because a character is only a single byte. We can put a character anywhere in a struct and it won't need any kind of padding. And that's what we call these, this 3 byte, this 4 byte little amount of memory in between that we have to put in there so we can make sure this rule, this alignment rule, is followed. So here we've got our character. We have to have 3 bytes of padding so that we can place our array, and arrays have to be aligned based on not the size of the total array, but the size of the type of data that array contains. So we have to make sure it's multiple of 4 because we've got integers there, so we can start our array at p+4. The next index will be at p+8. And then we have this double, and we have to give it another 4 bytes of padding so that it can start at a multiple of 8. We also have to make sure that the entire structure or the entire struct will end at a place that is a multiple of the largest data type in that struct. So this one's ending at p+24. That's fine because our largest data type here is a double and a multiple of 8. And this has to do with being able to access these these variables, these places in memory via that pointer arithmetic that we have been using. So that's why we have to have them aligned in this way. And that's why we have like padding and stuff like that, that will allow us to do that. There we go. I think this is basically just re-saying what I said. Okay, so yeah. So our line data will require, our primitive data types require K bytes. So the address has multiple K. It's required on some machines. It's advised on x86-64. Again, that's for like, you know, efficient memory access. The motivation here is that the memory is accessed or by these aligned chunks of 4 or 8 bytes. And it's inefficient to load or store data that spans quad word boundaries. This also has to do with virtual memory. So it really, what that is emphasizing is that it makes it more efficient and easier to access this memory and store it. And the compiler will insert these gaps in structure to ensure correct alignment of fields. So depending on how the programmer declares these structs, the compiler will insert, like, will align and insert padding there. This is just a review of these different data type sizes. This should all be, like I said, a review. The nice thing about binary is that if we need to align this stuff, we can just, for short, we have the lowest 1 bit has to be 0 for 4 byte data, like int and float. The lowest 2 bytes need to be 0. And then for doubles, longs, and character pointers, we have the lowest 3 bytes need to be doubles. And then for actual long and doubles, they have to be the lowest 4 bits. Sorry, need to be 4. Need to be 0. Wow, it's Friday. Okay. So here's a look at alignment. Again, we have to make sure that the struct, the total size of the struct has to be a multiple of its largest element, which in this case is 8. Okay, we already talked about that. So here is another way that could be. As you can see here, we've just aligned it a little bit differently. It's still the same. We've just put all of our padding on the end rather than the padding in between the elements there. So we still have to have that 7 bytes of padding. There's really not a more efficient way to create this struct, but we can have it either in between our elements our data, or we can have it at the very end. So we can make sure that the total size of our struct is a multiple of 8. And that is because we could also have an array of structs, right? So we want to be able to like access these structs in memory efficiently the same way that we can access anything else. So we could have like multiple structs. We'd want to be able to move along by that size and make sure that we're like not cutting into the middle of some other element. This is accessing, if we were treating these structs, or if we were putting these structs in an array, this is just kind of showing us how you would go about accessing elements and how that would be computed by the machine. Here's the other important thing. So if we're trying to make sure that our structs are as memory efficient as possible, like here we've got 6 bytes of padding versus only having to use 2 bytes of padding. And the way that we do that is we put our large data types first, right? Because C and D can go anywhere. We don't have to make sure that those get placed, you know, in a multiple of 4s. We have this integer where we have to immediately put 3 bytes of padding. And then we have to add another 3 bytes of padding on the end to make sure that the whole thing is a multiple of 4. I think that means we're done with those data structures. It's just kind of a summary of what we've talked about for both arrays and structures. The elements are all packed into a contiguous region of memory. Arrays use index arithmetic to locate individual elements. Structures use offsets that are determined by the compiler, that we saw how things were put together with that padding. Again, may require internal and external padding to ensure alignment. You can also like nest structures and arrays arbitrarily. You can have an array of structs. You can have a structure that has arrays in it. So that is all of that. And so that's also all of the time we have today. Definitely, we are going to give you stuff for your final on Monday. So make sure that you tune in on Monday for that. We also have like an activity that we normally do for this. We might like post that if you are interested in. It just has to do really with struct alignment and making sure that you understand that. But we're not gonna give it to you in class because it requires paper. So Monday we'll talk about final stuff and how you can how you'll be able to get your 100 final points. We're gonna have a little bit of actual shell lab stuff that I think, like I said, we're probably gonna proctor like an actual test, but it'll be very short. We're also gonna have kind of a menu of I think that'll be 20 points. We'll have a menu of different options, so you can either do like some amount of coding or some amount of like just like written response to either. We've got a we're working on getting Cash Lab up, which we've never done before, so that would be a new lab for us, as well as like a new approach to Attack Lab. Or we're going to have some talks that you can like some computer science like talks that you can watch and then write a written response to. So we'll like kind of pick and choose like what you want to do, and we'll give that stuff to you on Monday, so hopefully you'll have plenty of time to get that done. So you have a little bit of extra time to gain those 100 points. We will have help hours so that if you do choose like one of the coding assignments, or if you have any questions about anything, shell lab questions, because we are going to have a little bit of shell lab on the test. And I think we'll kind of review what that's going to look like on Monday as well. But you can still come to help hours at any point. Any questions about that stuff? I feel like even if there's no questions about slides, so people usually have questions about test stuff, but those might all be answered on Monday. We also, just so you know, if you want to like go a little further on the side, we have some like little test your knowledge stuff that you can do on your own if that interests you.
I'm good, thanks, Kaylin.
Okay. Well, then I will see you guys on Monday and we'll talk about finals.
Yeah, have a good weekend.
I think that is it. I think we're done with course material now. So yeah, you guys have a good weekend too. I can't believe it's Friday. It makes no sense. But
yeah.
Enjoy your couple days off.
Yep. All righty, see ya.
And the semester is so close to being over. See, okay. Bye. Bye guys.
See ya.